This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Young kids might hear, well, the Carrolls will always be in debt. We'll always have a car loan. We'll always have a mortgage. We'll always have credit card debt. And a young person that grows up in that world may believe, well, that's just what you do. You just grow up with credit card debt and car loans and a mortgage.
Hey again, Millionaire University. So excited that you're back for today's episode, which is part two of a three-part series we are doing with Adam Carroll, this incredibly talented, smart man who is bringing all the knowledge when it comes to money, finances, paying off debt, investing in your future. Today's episode is going to dive deep into something that I personally geek out about and something that I've had many conversations with Tara actually about, and that is energy, money energy, our beliefs and our narratives when it comes to making money, keeping money, and all of the things that really get in the way or help propel us forward when it comes to being successful. And I find this conversation to be so important because we can talk all day long about spreadsheets and planning and investing and debt payoff, and we can write it all down. We can have a perfect strategy. But if you don't get to the core, to the root of the beliefs that you have around money, around being deserving, around making money and saving money, then all of that is really going to fall flat. And today's episode, we're really even going to get into the core beliefs that we have adopted from our parents, from the way that we saw money being spent, earned, saved, invested as we were growing up. And I get a little bit vulnerable on this episode, and I let Adam flip the script and ask me some questions and share some really personal things about my money consciousness and what I believe and what I've thought and some of my earliest memories around money and some of the trauma that I've had around money. And so I'm opening up, and I'm hoping that in doing so, you will also be able to be more vulnerable and be honest with yourself around where these money stories originate. And Adam's going to give us some great tools and questions that you can ask yourself to help you dive deep into the subject matter. I know Justin and Tara would echo my sentiment in saying this is important, powerful stuff, and we can teach you all the ways to make money. But if we don't do this inner work, then all of that is going to really just exacerbate an already existing problem. Or it can make things even better and more amazing if you already have some really good roots when it comes to understanding money and your worthiness and all of the things. So I'm just going to let Adam take it away from here. You're going to partake in a really cool conversation. Like I said, it's going to get deep. It's going to get vulnerable and very honest. And I think we spent a good amount of time on this episode, which is very important because, like I said, we're going to get into even more when it comes to the strategic and the technical and even the next episode. And we talked on the previous one in this series about some of the things that you can start doing with your kids and for yourself to start looking at money differently. And by the way, if you haven't listened to the first episode in the series, make sure you pause this, go back, listen to that, and then return to this one. This is one you're probably going to repeat over and over and over because there's so many good value nuggets in this episode, but they do build upon each other. So let's get into today's episode where we're really going to get deep into your money beliefs and your money stories. Here we go. All right, Adam, you're back. I'm so excited. We're here again chatting about something that I'm nerdy passionate about, and that is money psychology. When I first met Justin and Tara, who are the creators of this podcast, I had a very different mindset about money and what was possible with earning money, you know, all of the things, what was possible for me because of how I was raised and the patterns that I was really ingrained as a child. And this new awareness, this new light came into my life when I met them and realized, wait, the way I've always thought it had to be is not the case. So I'm excited to hear some of your perspectives and what you have learned as you've made some of these shifts in your life and what you've learned on a deeper level about money and energy and the way that we perceive it and what's really possible.
Cool. I love it. Yeah. Just a couple of money nerds nerding out here today. And I want to flip the script a little bit on you too, Kirsten, and do some coaching and find out what your answers to some of these questions will be. Before I dive into that, just to give everybody a little backdrop, when people ask me what I do, I often tell them I'm a behavioralist because I really love studying human behavior. It started out with consumer behavior, economic behavior, what people do in certain situations.
Yeah.
And then I got into learning the Enneagram and social styles and DISC profile and Myers-Briggs and the Kolbe Index and all that stuff. I geek out on all of them. And I realized that the reason I love it is human behavior is very predictable. And so I wanted to get really good at reading people's sort of money script so that we could reprogram their money script for financial abundance and success. So today, yeah, I'm a behavioralist and I love talking about this stuff with folks like you who also geek out about it.
Yeah. I mean, my degree was pretty much the degree I could get the quickest when my husband and I were married and he was finishing his master's. And it was a degree in communication, but I didn't realize beforehand. It was just like, oh yeah, I can get the degree, that I actually really did have a passion for human behavior like you. And that's why I love marketing in the business that I do. I create quizzes. So all of those things, Enneagram, DISC profiles, comes in very heavily into what I do, because you're right. People do have predictable behaviors and it's really due in part to patterns and the way they've been brought up, and they take those things with them. And until there's like a moment where they realize that can be changed, they'll continue on. They'll continue to do the same things that they've seen done. Yeah, let's do it. Let's talk about it. Dive deep.
Cool.
Evaluate me.
So here's where I start. And maybe I'll just, if you're okay, I'll just roll you through what our normal conversation is around money. So I'm curious, first and foremost, this is going to be a weird question. And maybe you've heard this before, but I want you to imagine that you're in your living room. There's a knock at the door, at the front door, and you get up going to the door. You open the front door and you see money standing there in human form. So money personified is standing there waiting for you. First of all, describe money for me. What does it look like? And what's your relationship to money? Like, how do you feel with money personified standing there?
Okay, well, I'm not going to overthink this. I'm going to tell you exactly what I pictured right as you said it. And it was male. It was like a man. There was a friendliness there. And I imagined myself hugging it.
Very good.
I know. I'm actually really excited that that was my knee-jerk reaction. So it's a warm thing. It's a happy thing. And it's something I'm very excited to see. It's something, it actually, I told you before we started, I just lost my dad about a month ago.
Yeah.
And I think there's a part of it there where my dad is emulated a little bit in that. When he was alive, I didn't realize till he was gone how much of a security blanket he was to me.
Yeah.
Financially, it's not that I was like taking money all the time, but he was very quick to just hand it over. And when he was gone, it was just, now we're having to look at money differently and see what we can do with all of the hard work that he did. And so maybe that's a little bit of why he's personified in that a little bit, because there's security in money and it's safety. When I see, when I open up the door, it's something that I'm familiar with and comfortable with and I need and I love and I don't want to be gone. And I need to bring it in the house ASAP because I don't want it to run away and go to the next house. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you for answering that way too, by the way. That's being as honest as you are about this. And clearly the fact that you want to hug it and you're excited to see it, to me would suggest you have a healthy, you now have a healthy relationship to money. Because some people, candidly, Kirsten, they would say, and I've had people tell me this, it is a nameless, shapeless figure that when I get closer to it, it moves away. I mean, that's pretty deep. One dude told me, it's like a really hot girl across the bar that I'm afraid to go talk to. I was like, bro, that needs some therapy. We got to unpack that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yours, given that yours is male, and can I assume maybe a little bit older, certainly older than you, is the money personified. So knowing that, I'm going to set that answer aside. My next question for you is, what is your earliest money memory? So the very first thing that comes to mind when you were a kid, as it related to money, what's that story?
Oh my gosh, it's kind of a bad one. And I don't know if there's an earlier one than this, but I think about this one all the time. I was pretty young and I would go, my grandma lived a few hours away from us. And I think for some reason I was staying with her by myself for a period of time, just maybe a few days a week. And she had this filing cabinet in her office. And I always dream about being in this room again, actually. And there was just cash in one of the manila envelopes in there. And I took it because it was just like, ooh, money. And I felt so guilty. I probably put it in my little purse or something. And I think my grandma somehow knew. I don't know how she would even track cash in a manila envelope. Maybe it's just in my head that I was so guilty. I thought she was talking about that. And I had to go put it back. But I was so excited about it and I wanted to have it. So clearly I've always had a thing for really, really wanting money and taking whatever I can find.
Yeah.
It's kind of a vulnerable, embarrassing one to share that my first memory of money is stealing it. Yeah, that's kind of the first one that comes to mind.
Well, and I'll let you off the hook. There's a number of people I've talked to. Their very first recollection is, oh, my grandpa had a big change jar and I would dig my hand in there and, you know, pocket as much as I possibly could.
I'm not crazy.
Yeah, you're not the only one. Do you remember how old you were? Do you have a sense of your age at the time?
I feel like I was not school age yet. So I might have maybe been like 4 or 5 years old, but okay. I feel like I was pretty young.
Yeah. And had you been squirreling around looking in drawers and things when you found this?
Yeah, I think it was just playing office or something is probably likely what I was doing. I wasn't looking for money, just bored. It's grandma's house. Eventually, there's only so many toys to play with. So I was probably just bored.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember that. We would open drawers just to see what was in there. And the feeling you mentioned having was guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So much so that you put it back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I didn't give it to her. I didn't say, look, I took this. I'm so sorry. I just put it back and pretended it didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Tell me about upbringing for you in your family. What were the money choices and decisions like at home for you growing up? What did you hear from your parents?
I never felt like we didn't have a lot, but there was definitely always a desire. If we had more, then we could do this and this and this. If your dad got this promotion, everything would be different. There was a lot of shopping, a lot of fun. Money was a source of fun. And when you don't have money, you can't have fun. So we had a boat. I had a really comfortable childhood until about teenage years when we moved. My dad took a pay cut and it was conversations about money not being enough now and kind of struggling. And that pushed me into a perpetual state of I need to provide, if I want fun things, then I have to make my own money. So I've had a job since I was 13 years old, just so that I could have fun money. And
yeah,
again, like I told you, my dad just passed and I always felt secure. Like I, and later in life too, they had plenty, more than enough, and they were always happy to give and wanted us to be comfortable and us to enjoy things. So, but yeah, growing up, it was kind of like two different worlds. One where we were totally fine. It wasn't really an issue. Didn't really think much about it. And then a few years where we had to get back on our feet and there was a lot of financial struggle and strain. So I kind of grew up in both worlds a little bit.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So here's how I would sort of, I would never use the word diagnose or anything like that, but my observations about what you just shared is that money came pretty easily and frequently for you as a kid. Because it sounds like your dad did well and it was a comfortable upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to the teenage years and you realize, oh, this is kind of confusing. We were good and now we're not. And I need to provide. So I'm going to work hard. My assumption is you're probably a hard worker no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair?
Yep.
Yeah. So it is said that our money personality is set by the age of 9. And so from 0 to 9, you may have been getting money messages that were more abundant related. And then once you get to the teenage years, while your parents may not have been as abundant, you were still like on that abundance path and went after that.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting just to see people go through that different life cycle. Like I've met people who they were in a married parent home and everything was great. And then their parents got divorced and one parent had a lot and one parent didn't. And so they had this very different, disparate experience around money based on who they were with at the time. And so it creates confusion for them around money of who they're going to be and how they're going to be with mom versus dad, depending on who had the money and who didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always interesting to me to meet somebody like you. My sense is you're probably very hard worker, always knew how to make money. How were you about spending it? Were you good at making
spending it too. No, I'm not really good at spending. Keeping. Yeah.
Yeah.
At times it fluctuates for sure, but I definitely feel like probably those early years, what was ingrained is money, you make money so that you can spend money and you use money for fun. So when I've come at periods in my life where I've had a lot of money, it's not that it's all been irresponsibly spent, but it's definitely spent on experiences.
Yeah.
I don't like stuff. I don't typically buy a lot of fancy things. I mean, we have a couple really nice things, but It's more of a vehicle to just enjoy life. And it's been very limiting to me. I think we talked about this episode one when I said people, and now I'm referring to myself, view budgets as limitations.
Yeah.
And it's taking till now to start understanding, oh, I really actually want to be more wise and I want to have the money before I spend it and I want to save more so that I don't have to work so hard later.
Yeah.
So we're coming full circle, and I'm grateful I'm still in my 30s to be learning some of this because so many people don't. But totally. It's been a roller coaster trying to figure out where is this coming from? Like, why do I believe this about money? Why can't I be better with it? Why?
Well, because, and if I could interject, because money is fun, right? Mm-hmm. Like money is meant to have fun with. So why not go have fun with the money I'm creating, right?
Right. Yep.
And I think where I might coach you a little bit on that, and I should ask, are you open to some coaching on this first?
Of course. Absolutely. Right? And I hope that it'll help everybody else listening. I'm sure I'm not alone in where I'm at with money.
Yeah. The coaching I would give you is around that future orientation to money. And so my assumption is future Kirsten would like to have as much fun as present day Kirsten. True or true?
True.
Yeah. And yet present Kirsten would probably prefer not to work as hard when she becomes future Kirsten.
Mm-hmm.
Also true?
Absolutely. Yep. True.
Yeah. So then the goal is how much of the money that you're making ends up becoming an employee of yours to work on its own to create the fun money that you can go have as future you. It's that slight distinction of money is fun or money is meant to be used for fun versus money is to be made to be utilized in such a way that it creates more and more money, allowing me to have fun with less and less work, right?
Yep.
Subtle distinction. And most people would never make it because just in general, people equate, I go to work, I get paid, I go to work, I get paid. And we go to work, we get our corporate allowance, and we go spend it. And then we go to work, and we get our corporate allowance, and we spend it. And I think the distinction, certainly that we made, my wife and I made in our life, was we go to work, we get our corporate allowance, and we spend about 40 or 50% of it, because the other 50% is going to go make money for us so that future us can party it up in Italy and not worry about having to work. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. So for most people, how can they take what we just did and do that for themselves? How can we start to evaluate and understand that present day, who we are, what we're doing with money is a result of, and I think it's really interesting you brought up about by age 9 is when a lot of those core things are established in our brains. So if you can go back and figure that out for yourself, why you might be doing some of the things you're doing, well, what are some of the questions that they should be asking themselves? Yeah. You just asked them of me, but if they were to try and help themselves with this, what would you recommend?
The first thing I would ask is, what did I see and hear growing up? Mm-hmm. And just maybe get quiet, get meditative, put some music on and ask yourself that question and then see what comes up. A good example of this, I have a friend who I said, what did you hear growing up? And she said, we'll never have a lot of money, so we might as well spend it now. And if you think about this said over and over again, and she said it was said all the time, well, we'll never have a lot of money, so we might as well spend it now, because we'll never have a lot of money, so we might as well spend it now. It was very circular, the logic itself. And you can imagine that if there is a tax refund, what do they do with it?
They're going to have fun with it now, even though they have a lot of money. They're going to have fun with it now.
Because we'll never have a lot. So this $3,000 we just got back, or $10,000 we just got back, well, let's go to take this vacation or what have you. And so there was a book called Secrets of the Millionaire Mind by T. Harv Eker. And it was one of the early books I read on money. And I actually saw T. Harv present a number of times, and he's a brilliant presenter. But he would say that if you don't like the fruit on the tree of your life, your fruit tree is producing apples and you want it to produce oranges. What do you have to change in order to produce different fruit?
Yeah, you have to plant a different tree.
Plant a different tree. You got to change it from the roots, right?
Yeah.
So if you want to change the fruits, you must first change the roots. And the roots are things like, what did I see and hear growing up? What were the money messages I got over and over again? And as an example, young kids might hear, again, that subconscious programming that's going the whole time. They might hear things like, well, the Carols will always be in debt, right? I mean, we'll always have a car loan. We'll always have a mortgage. We'll always have credit card debt. And a young person that grows up in that world may believe, well, that's just what you do. You just grow up with credit card debt and car loans and a mortgage. Yeah. And so I started questioning the roots that I had gotten. And my dad would say things like, put your money in mutual funds. And I think he did. In fact, he ended up working for Franklin Templeton, the mutual fund company. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure he believed it, but I didn't see it. I certainly didn't do it when he was telling me to do it. And I got into real estate and people were like, oh, real estate's risky. And my grandfather told me all sorts of stories about failing in real estate. But that also was part of the program. And I was like, I got to explore these roots if I'm going to change the fruits. And the first question is, what did I see and hear growing up? Mm-hmm. Second question is, what are my patterns or habits around money that are either helpful or hindrances? Hmm. And helpful patterns of money might be you have a really good savings habit, or you're putting money in investments. And a hindrance might be every single time you drive past Starbucks, you pull in and get an $8 drink. Hmm. That may be a bad habit. Mm-hmm. And I'm not one of those guys that's like, cut out all lattes. That's your factor to be a millionaire. I too have a Starbucks habit, but I have enough positive habits to outweigh some of the negative ones. And I think that's part of the key is figuring out what are our positive money habits that we're after.
Like so eating habits, right? That 80-20, where you, as long as you're eating healthy 80% of the time, 20% of the time, you can have desserts and treats and, you know, those kinds of things. And the same, it sounds like, has to apply when it comes to your financial healthiness, is making sure that you can still have the latte, you can still swing through the drive-thru every once in a while, as long as 80% of the time, you're very aware of how much money you have, you're spending it wisely. Because I think we, right now, especially where things are just, we're just under a lot of stress and strain. Our economy's weird. It's easier in the short term to just say, you know what, though, like, I deserve this because I'm so stressed out that I would rather just spend the $50 to go out to eat tonight and get the, and $50, by the way,
does not go very far.
Is the drive-through, right? It's fast food now when you have a family of five versus before when you could do it for 10 to 15. And so it's so much easier to fall into that where the 20% starts to become the 80%, and then you're in a world of hurt when we could have made that stretch further, but we let this become, you know, in the moment now, one over the future that we're trying to save for. So it's a crazy time we're living in, and it might feel a little bit crazy to talk about, well, let's just start changing our mindset around money when we're all looking at this crazy economy. And I think we all look at it differently depending on where you're at in, you know, economics and everything. But a lot of people listening are probably thinking some of those same thoughts of, all right, but how do we use that right now? So I think those are fantastic questions to ask to start to build awareness around that. And then how do we start to shift that mindset and move into a new place? How do we change those roots in a way that's lasting and feels sustainable? Because I think sometimes we have the best of intentions and we say, okay, I'm going to have a budget. I'm going to do it. And maybe we go too extreme and then it's not sustainable. So what do you reckon on starting to make those changes?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in that question because from my perspective and what my wife and I did, we played really good offense and really good defense at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I think there are families out there that probably play really good offense. They make good money, but they're not great at playing defense, right? Yeah. Which is, how do we minimize or limit some of what we're spending if it's not essential? Yeah. And it's easy to, now it's easy for me to say to someone, well, just cut out all the stuff that doesn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. When a family's, I want to make sure my kids are having fun and I want to have good food in the house and we'd like to go out to eat every now and again. There's an idea. It was put forth by Ramit Sethi in his book, I Will Teach You to Be Rich, where he said, if you can cut out everything that is not important, you will have plenty of money for the things that are important. Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks to defense a little bit of like, where are we going to cut? Right now, I know I have five streaming services that I pay for on a monthly basis. I pay for a subscription to a car wash service. And I love it because I love driving a clean car. And I like drive. There's three or four of them on my route everywhere. So I like having that. I'm not going to cut that out, but I will cut out other things to make sure that I can keep that in place. Mm-hmm. So I think offense and defense become important.
We'll be back right after a word from our sponsors. More and more entrepreneurs and investors are discovering the awesome franchise opportunities that exist across a variety of industries. Franchising can simply be the better path, and interest in franchising is at an all-time high. Lucky for you, John Austinson, founder of FranBridge Consulting and a past Millionaire University guest, is here to help you explore the premier franchise opportunities today. John and his Framebridge consulting team are part of the largest franchise brokerage in the U.S. and have vetted the market thoroughly. Framebridge is hands down the premier source for the best opportunities in the franchise world, including both active and passive opportunities. From tiny homes to youth soccer to industrial hoses to pets, senior care to mental health, and more. John has served as an Inc. 500 franchisor and is a multi-brand franchisee himself. And he does more placements than anyone else in the country. Sign up for a free consultation call with John today or get a free copy of his book, Non-Food Franchising, at FranBridgeConsulting.com. That's FranBridgeConsulting.com. Available in the U.S. and Canada.
I think the other piece of this is really getting clear on what your beliefs around money are. So when we talk about the early money memories and what's your relationship to money, there are some people that their relationship to money where you felt like you wanted to give money a hug, some people would see it and they'd be like, I'm freaked out. It's there to get me. That would be more of a negative relationship to money. Mm-hmm. And this goes way back, I think, to even our first interview where we talked about raising kids who thrive with money in the Monopoly game. The reason I wanted my kids to have an emergency savings account is CNN Money stated, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, that 66% of the American public could not come up with $500 cash in the event of an emergency.
Wow.
And I was like, that's just a habit problem, right? Mm-hmm. They just don't have the habit of seeing money saved up in a bank account. And it may be like, well, we'll never have a lot of money, so we might as well spend it now logic.
Right.
But what I wanted to do was show my kids 500 is totally possible. 1,000 is possible. The reason I put 10 grand on the table was I wanted to show them when we played Monopoly, listen, this is not a lot of money. It is, but it's not in the grand scheme of things. You will all be able to amass this amount of money in no time.
Yeah.
And there are families out there who would go, 10 grand, man, that'd be nice to get 10 grand. And yet, between my wife and I, we're not on some crazy income between the two of us. It's probably pretty average. But we've built our lives in such a way that setting aside an amount of money becomes more normal and natural because of our money psychology, which is basically money comes easily and frequently. We get more checks in the mail than we do bills. I'm a money magnet. I say these kinds of things all the time. And because I believe it through and through, it tends to become more and more true.
Okay, so that is something, and this is where I really nerd out, is really on the energetics of it, because we can sit here and talk about, and I love, by the way, that concept of offense and defense, because I think a lot of people think they can just defensively earn their way to $1 million and you can't. There has to be some offense, has to be some, you know, forward movement and making more money so that you have more to invest and more to do with.
Totally.
So I love that concept. I've never heard it described that way. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And so while all those things are great, I've always kind of had this philosophy that you can't spreadsheet your way to success, because while it's great to be educated and understand the logical side, there is such a deeper layer energetically of money. And this was a major shift that I made. And it wasn't until later that I did some coaching and I did a program that showed me the language and gave me the frame of reference for it.
Yeah.
But I still did it without understanding what I was doing. And that was when I met Justin and Tara. There was the paradigm shift of, wait a minute, we have the same amount of kids. We're kind of around the same age. They're millionaires. I'm not. So there must be something that I'm not understanding here. And I started to almost put on a hat of, I'm a millionaire. As I would talk to Tara, I remember coming home and walking in the apartment being like, why do I live here? I fully believed I was in this space of feeling like I was already very successful. And everything that I did, the actions I took, all stemmed from that deep, deep sense of belief. So something you just barely said was, along those same lines where, you know, if you have that, those mantras, you believe those things, those affirmations, and you have to believe it. Otherwise, it's just nice words, you know, and that's what has to come into play when you're in those decision-making opportunities. And when you're really choosing, what's the identity here? Am I identifying as somebody who's successful, who's great with money? Or am I going to stick to those old patterns where I'm somebody who never has enough and just has to spend the money and have fun now? So has it sounds like you know what I'm talking about. We're speaking some of the
exactly
same language.
What you're talking about. I do.
Help
I know
break
exactly
this
what
down.
You're talking about. And it's so much of it is in the language we use of things like another bill or I'm so tired of being broke all the time. Or geez, it's just all I see is debt. There's just, you know, bleeding red ink all the time. Those kind of statements said over and over again means that's what you're focused on. And when you're focused on, that's what you'll get more of. Yeah. I laugh somewhat at the people who are like, I just got to get out of debt. And then I watch them and all they do is use their credit card everywhere they go. I'm like, well, that's not really the way to get out of debt. There is a book that totally just absolutely turned things on its ear for me, Kirsten. And the book is called A Happy Pocket Full of Money. Oh. And it's less about money and more about quantum physics, which is energetics and the study of the fact that when we have a thought, the thought is energy and the energy emanates from our brain in particles and waves. And it looks for like thoughts, like energy. And so that means if we're thinking positive, abundant thoughts, that same frequency is going out looking for those kinds of things. And I realized years ago that I was just going to set myself on a course for wealth and abundance. And I started putting things in play that would just remind me of that. So as an example, I ordered, those of you who are just listening and can't see, but I ordered, this is movie theater money, like prop money. And I have 10 grand in cash sitting on my desk all the time.
Oh my gosh.
As a reminder that this is not, it's a lot of money, but 10 grand, you could fit it in your pocket. I mean, it's not that much. $1 million would fit in a backpack. So I wanted to remind myself that this is easy. Money comes easily in frequency. This amount of money should not scare me or anybody else away. And slowly but surely, the words, the language I used around money started to change. And I noticed that it was easier to make money because I am a money magnet. And it just, it tends to be attracted to folks who have that belief and move forward with that belief. And I think this is key. They're taking action at the same time they hold the belief.
Yeah. I call it aligned action. And I kind of created my own acronym for this after I recognized what I was doing. And it's kind of corny, but I just call it, you know, you're going to be able to go far. So there's the feel. You have to feel it. You have to get to a sense of identity with it. Then you have to take aligned action and you have to be able to receive it. And I love that because I find that most people are lacking in at least one of those areas. There's some way. Yeah. And for me, for a minute, it was the receive. I was able to feel my way into it. I was able to take the action. I had a lot of guilt with it, which is interesting as we go back to my initial memory with having money makes me feel a little bit guilty and I'm a little bit nervous about what I'm supposed to do with it. I don't want to lose it. And in turn, that's led to some losing it because of the fear of losing it. So you have to get those frequencies in full alignment. Otherwise, you can be like most people that are working, doing hard, and then they still don't have enough because they haven't rooted out those initial beliefs about what's possible and what they're allowed to have.
Totally. I love the acronym, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
And I could not agree more that receiving is the part that a lot of people really struggle with.
Yeah.
And I would say even deep down, there's a part of that with me where one of the last things I'll do on an engagement is send the invoice and it will be delayed sending it. And sometimes it's just send it. Why are you not sending it? I don't know. For some reason, there's some energetic block to sending it and receiving it.
Yeah.
This total sidebar here, but I had worked with an energy doctor at one point and I'd said, I'm just stagnant in where I'm at income wise and you know what I want to do in terms of building wealth. And he muscle tested me based on statements that I was making. And so if you're familiar with muscle testing or not familiar with it, you hold your arm straight out. Someone pushes down on your arm when you say a statement. And when your arm goes weak, you don't believe what you just said. And so I said, I love myself when I make enough money. And I was strong at that. And then he said, I want you to repeat after me. I love myself when I make more than enough money. And I repeated that statement and I was solid. And he said, now I want you to say, I love myself when I make massive abundance. And immediately he pressed on my arm and I was weak. And he said, I don't think you don't believe that. I think you have not defined what massive abundance looks like.
Yeah.
And I think there are some people that are saying things like, if I could just get by, if I could just get another $5,000, if I could just make 10 grand more a year, I'd be fine. And the reality is life will pay any price you ask of it. The problem is we're not asking and we don't believe that we're due whatever it is we're asking.
Yeah.
So how do we ratchet up the belief level and take aligned action, right? To then receive what we are truly due.
Yeah. Okay. I have to ask you an interesting question. And this kind of bounces back to episode one. And it was something that came up for me as I was watching your TED talk. And you talked about how your kids played the game of Monopoly differently when there was no real money involved. And I love the direction we went with it. It's so true. We need to look at money from a real perspective.
Yeah.
But also how much of what they were initially doing where it was just like, oh, I'll have enough at the end or we can settle things up later was almost in a different energetic space lot more abundant in some ways.
Totally.
I mean, maybe they weren't being as responsible, but do you think there's a little bit of that, that we need to go back to faith or just an inherent sense of worthiness when it comes to money and trusting that things are going to work out? And how do you feel like we can couple that with being smart, being intentional, but also not making it so heavy, if that makes sense?
That's a great question. And candidly, I got some pretty harsh feedback on the TED Talk on YouTube because, and I'd made some flippant comment on the talk about what am I teaching these kids? And what I meant was like, what am I teaching them about the game of Monopoly or the idea of business?
Yeah.
And while I appreciated the very socialistic nature at which they were playing the game, they were being very friendly. And it was just about being on the board together and having fun together. I think that I'm gonna be vulnerable here too. I don't think that I personally or my wife and I have done a good enough job in demonstrating giving and philanthropy to our children. Mm-hmm. And I probably have studied Warren Buffett for too long because Warren Buffett's, no, we're going to keep everything in the coffers until the end and then we give it all away and it's, you know, way bigger than it would have ever been. And I tend to believe that a little bit, but I also, my grandfather's voice is in my ear. And he was one of the most generous human beings to ever walk the planet. And he would say, live simply so others can simply live. And then he would give everything that he had to other people. So there was like this happy medium that I was trying to achieve between the two.
Yeah.
And I think I probably could have done a better job with my children expressing that or exposing that to them. Though I find them to be very generous people. I think you're right when they were playing that way, where it's generative morality. We're going to give to everybody and everyone's going to have it. I do think there's something to be learned from that.
We definitely want to provide for everybody around us, but we can't do that if we're not being wise. So I think it's
totally
finding that happy medium between those, which is hard in my opinion.
It is hard. It is hard. And it's especially hard in a world where Instagram is showing the luxurious of everything, right?
I mean,
everyone is posting. If we're posting anything, we're posting our 5-star resorts and our travel and our the newest thing that we bought or the car that we just got or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So we're showing that as a society. And I think generally speaking, when I find someone who is really content, I'm always in awe of that person. And it goes back, there's a story, I think it was either 3 Feet from Gold or in Think and Grow Rich, or it was Acres of Diamonds, which was a Russell Cromwell book years ago. But it basically said the richest man in the world, he was rich because he was content and he was content because he was rich.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some happy medium involved in that statement, right?
So that's basically our goal, is to find this inherent state in which we just do feel that contentedness, and that contentedness attracts the success. But we're also wise and we're also being smart and we're trying to learn and grow and expand. And that in and of itself also creates the contentedness that we can have. So it's crazy. It's hard to explain in words, but I think we've done a good job of trying to emulate and explain and bring it full circle of how we can balance both and changing that money identity and understanding those roots of what we believe and changing those roots. I love this conversation. I appreciate your insight on it. I think there's so much for people to glean just from this conversation that becomes the root of everything that we're going to continue to talk about and that people need to know if they have that goal of becoming a millionaire. This is where it all starts. So I love it. Yep.
Very cool. Yeah. I'm excited where the next episode goes as well.
Yeah.
My hope is that all of these have built upon each other. We talked about kids and money. We've talked about money psychology. I think our next segment is around the Shred Method and how we've helped people create freedom and flexibility and option around money and in their lives using very common conventional tools that the bank provides to us, but never really teaches us how to use effectively. So I'm excited to have that combo with you too, Kirsten.
Oh, me too. And you guys will have to be waiting with bated breath for that episode. It's going to be a great one. I can tell we've already had some great conversations. So until then, you guys, we'll see you on the next episode.
See you soon.
I honestly never tire of conversations like this, where we can dive deep and we can get into the heart of the matter and really understanding energetics and quantum theory and all the things that happen with our brains and our being when it comes to money and the things around us and how energy creates things. It is seriously one of my favorite things to discuss, if you couldn't tell on this episode. And I was not lying about how vulnerable and honest that we got on this episode. So I hope that you were able to take some of those questions that Adam gave you and that you're asking those of yourself. Maybe you paused the episode to have some time to sit with some of those questions And if you haven't, then go and do that before tuning into anything else today. It's really important that we get still and that we understand where we're at so that we can know how to move forward. And I really, really loved Adam's perspective on the offense and the defense. That's something that I have actually really struggled to articulate in my own life when it comes to understanding the balance between saving money and then also trying to believe that it's abundant and spending money and investing. And so I hope that that also gave you some awareness on how we just need to reframe our thoughts when it comes to money and how we can use it as a tool, and also where some of these beliefs come around money being good or bad. And I'm really curious, for those of you listening, when he asked you to picture money showing up in human form at the door, what that looks like for you. We would love to know your comments and your thoughts. So go ahead and leave a comment on social media. We would love to know what you guys thought about this episode and how it helped you to reframe your thoughts and your beliefs around money. And with all of that being said, we have another episode on this series to bring to you coming really soon with Adam. He's going to get into his personal method, the Shred Method, which I was really fascinated about, something I'd never heard of before. Some really unique ways that you can start thinking about how to grow your money and save for the future. So again, make sure that you're subscribed to the show and that you come back for the final part of this three-part series with Adam Carroll. Thanks again, Adam, for showing up again today and bringing so much value. I know that I was really, really enlightened and uplifted having these conversations with you, and I can't wait for you guys to hear the final episode of the series. We'll see you on that episode. Have a great day.